you know, I got the blessing from Jeffrey to go ahead and pursue an actual music career, which we weren't sure we would have in the Gun Club. And I was a bit frightened, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen. And to us, the Cramps were big rock stars and a real band that really made records and really played live. And I wasn't sure I could cut the mustard. So that was kind of my first reaction. And then I was really shocked and excited, and that my favorite underground band would ask me to play with them. So there was no audition process. They just said, no, you're in the band. They remembered I looked good, and they liked what they saw in the Gun Club, and that was enough for them. So I was initiated into the world of the Cramps, which, you know, is a very tight-knit kind of world and very tightly run ship and very focused. Something new to me, because it was very much about certain records and certain types of records of, you know, rockabilly, like garage rock and stuff I was already into. But, you know, I was going to have to dive a lot deeper into this world and the B-movie world, the horror movie. It's B-movie, really. Another chapter in learning about subculture started. And they immediately said, well, you have to have a different name. So we went along the process of thinking of different names for me. That was kind of the first thing I had to do, was change my identity. So we came up with like a whole long list of different things. There was things I thought of, things they thought of, and you know, things I had all my friends writing lists of different things it could be. We were thinking first, since my actual name is Brian, that I should be called Brian Gregory, as a son of Brian Gregory. But they didn't go for that. They wanted him gone. So then there was Mr. Tristan, and then there was Thing. Then one day, I think Ivy and Lux came up with Congo Powers, because they had the Congo voodoo candle, Santeria candle, and it's called the Congo candle, I think. On it, it said, when you light this candle, Congo Powers will be revealed to you. So we liked that Congo Powers sounded really good, like a good name. Kid was another name that was floating around, like the Kid and Kid this and Kid Murder and Kid that. And so, because I actually liked Kid a lot, Kid was my idea, because I thought it sounded like either a boxer or a pirate. And so we just thought Kid Congo Powers had a nice ring to it. And it kind of went along with Ivy's name at the time, was Poison Ivy Rorschach, you know, a three-word name. And Lux Interior, who had got his name off of a ad for a car with luxury interior, and Nick Knox, who I'm not sure where his name came from, but but it's a great name. I got my name, and then I decided I had to look the part, and so I started to get clothes together, looks. I was already quite a sharp dresser, and that was actually part of the, I think, attraction to them. I had like kind of messy, greasy greaser hair, kind of punky greaser, you know. And they told me they really were impressed that I had a gold blazer from Lansky Brothers in Memphis, which was where Elvis did some shopping. That, I think, was the clincher for them, that I actually had a gold blazer from Lansky Brothers. So I was allowed to wear that still. So I started getting my look together, and I got my tattoo. I went to Hollywood Boulevard, and I went to this Filipino tattoo artist, and I looked over what they had there, and I saw this shrunken head on the wall, and it really reminded me of like a Korean War Marines tattoo, some like horror, like vet that had gone insane now and like probably chopped people's heads off and then got a tattoo of it for to remember. So I got this tattoo and started to feel a little more cramps like. And I started hanging out with them and just doing things like, you know, listening to records and watching movies and thing, you know, getting influences that they had. And my hair decided to start growing it longer. Then I decided that I really would like to look something like Ronnie Spector. You know, that was like a big influence on my look at the time. I was a big Ronnie Spector fan. I wanted to kind of look like Ronnie Spector and Ronnie Spector's boyfriend put together. The thing is that I knew that I had like kind of big shoes to fill because Brian Gregory was so iconic in the band and such a face of the Cramps. And they had already, you know, really made their mark and like toured around the world. And he was a big favorite in the band. And I knew I had to kind of step up to the plate to, as far as image was concerned, as well as musically. You know, I started to really, you know, focus on a really like anything goes kind of look. Really mix the feminine with the masculine and make it sexy, you know. The Cramps were so much about sex, you know, almost more than anything. And so it had to be a sexy look. I think at first I wore a turban and wraparound sunglasses. That was my first look, which I thought was pretty great. And I probably should employ that again. You know, very Screaming Jay Hawkins sort of a thing. Now, I immediately went into rehearsing with them. You know, they were getting ready to make Psychedelic Jungle album. They had the songs and they had been playing. Some of them were really old songs, some of them cover versions. You know, I really loved Brian Gregory, and so I wanted to do what I loved about him, which was that kind of oozy fuzz bassy, you know, type of sound. And so, you know, it was also one of the first times I really started experimenting with sound as sound. And they gave me my first fuzz pedal. I'd never played through a pedal before. I always just played straight plugged into an amplifier in the gun club all the time. Well, I started learning songs and, you know, trying to add my own version of what I would like it to sound like. They were going through a period of more psychedelic than Burn 'Em Out rockabilly, you know, that, you know, they also were known for, but they also were quite oozy and sexy at the time. And, you know, there was no bass guitar. You know, I went for that really fat, like, kind of sound. It was all about having the beat come down and then slide some, and then like go into the next one. That's what I decided to make kind of my root bassiness. You know, I wasn't a really proficient guitar player at the time. The good thing also is that, you know, Ivy taught me a lot of stuff about rockabilly rhythm and a lot about blues scales and things, because I had to play a lot of bass lines. And so, you know, I practiced a lot, and I remember thinking, God, these songs are so hard. How am I ever going to remember all of them? And I look at it now and I'm like, how am I going to remember EAG? You know, how am I going to remember the same pattern every time? And, you know, I learned a lot more about blues, actually, with that, too. They're very bluesy at the time, very slow as molasses. The first show I played with them was in London at the Lyceum, and it must have been the end of 1980, and I think we were probably pretty under rehearsed, and I really didn't know about having sound at concerts and stuff. And although we made it through the concert and I was a big hit London fans and the press, you know, it was that kind of, for us, a kind of diabolical concert. But we went back, practiced, and started recording Psychedelic Jungle. And we recorded that at the A&M Studios in Hollywood. It was kind of my first, it was my first recording experience. So that was like a pretty posh thing, you know. It was a big recording studio. So we were on IRS Records at the time, you know, run by Miles Copeland. And so he, and the company was on the A&M lot because they were a subsidiary of A&M Records. We had like a lot of amps and a lot of different things and choices. And so I learned really fast. That's when I had to really pay attention to Ivy a lot. And she was actually quite a good teacher about showing me what to do. I mean, they knew I had no experience and they got me in the band, but I think they like that. I think they like having a slave in their band. They knew they could make me a slave. And I was more than willing. When we recorded Psychedelic Jungle, we did it at A&M Studios, which I think was a very different kind of thing for the Cramps to do, because they had recorded before with Alex Chilton and in Memphis and at Sam Phillips Studio. And, you know, everything had been like quite historic about that. So this was like going into a different territory. I think it had the choice really more had to do with, you know, it's where the Doors were, you know, it's where I think the Stooges even did work there. And it was because of the record company, IRS was a subsidiary of A&M, and Miles Copeland got a good deal. I don't know if it was a conscious choice to have a cleaner sound or not. I think it was more where we were, and it was time to make a record. For that song, Don't Eat Stuff Off the Sidewalk. And I remember the engineer was saying, like, oh, Karen Carpenter has the perfect giant crash cymbal. Because at the beginning, there's like a big crash cymbal swirl. And like, we put chainsaw. He said, I have to go to Karen Carpenter's locker and get out her big crash cymbal. So I thought that was really good, really a good ironic choice for a song called Don't Eat Stuff Off the Sidewalk to use Karen Carpenter's cymbal. So that is Karen Carpenter's crash cymbal on that song. We did lots of different weird experiments, like taking lots of speed so that we would be like ghosts when we played. And I think that works sometimes. And I can't remember, because you can't remember things when you're on speed. Then I remember when we did that song, she said, Lux, to get the correct Hazel Atkins sound and phrasing, he stuffed a styrofoam cup in his mouth and sang the entire song chewing on a styrofoam cup. So this is where I was learning what recording technique was about. And then we just ran around throwing ashtrays and screaming. And I was really happy with the sounds. I really like, you know, on the, like, I Can't Find My Mind, like, we got this, maybe we did become ghosts, because you could hear these really weird overtones and things, like in my guitar in that song. Every time the guitar stops, you can hear like these breaks, you can hear this like squeak, it's like bomb, it's like bomb, it's like amazing sound. Yeah, so like songs like Beautiful Gardens was totally improvised song. I think we had a riff. I just kept playing some crazy riff. And again, that was one of our ghost songs where we completely improvised the song. So we just started playing a riff and a beat, and then Lux went off and we went wherever it went. It went into some beautiful gardens. And it's funny, there's a backwards vocal on it. And at one point, it kind of like fades out and comes back in, and you hear this back weird sound. And it's Lux saying, if you knew what I knew about this record company, this place would be a parking lot. What I really like always loved about, like, on Songs the Lord Taught Us and Gravest Hits, was like Brian Gregory's guitar solos were just like pure weird sound. And so I got to, like caveman. I just tried to make a sound that was like a caveman. And I think quite successfully. Some of the cover versions I had heard at their house. And part of my training, in the tape they gave me. You know, that's how you teach your new band members. You give them tapes of your influences. I had known the songs from live and then did my research into the original versions of them. and that was a good thing about the Cramps, is that they really turned people on to a lot of old music that you otherwise wouldn't have known about because they had such obscure choices. I actually brought the Crusher to them. I was a big fan of the song, and I thought that was like a perfect kind of Cramp song. So I used to hear it a lot on the Dr. Demento show. That was when I was a teenager. I listened to it religiously. You know, I was really impressed always with Lex and Ivy's record collection. I was a record collector myself, and me and Jeffrey and all of my friends all were big record collectors, as most people who play music should be. And they had one of the biggest record collections I had ever seen, and very well cataloged, and according to style and era and year or even label. You know, with that came the right look, you know, and the right look was black, black and sexy, shiny. We even had we would have clothes made a lot, you know. There was always like allowance for getting our clothes done. Cramps are a fully formed vision. It's not just like whatever. It's all very focused and a strict vision, and it's also a very true vision, you know. There's nothing ironic about it in the least. People think that it's, oh, horror movies, oh, black, oh, blah, 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 oh, B movies. But it's like actually so much more than that. It's like it's a complete lifestyle and manifesto,